This is the internet's worst gaming podcast. I'm your host, Loki Jarson. Over there is my co-host, Joe Stizzy. Stizzy, how's it going?
It's going well, Loki. How about yourself?
I'm doing excellent.
The liar. No, I believe you.
I'm always excellent. You know why? Because we're talking games, and I love talking games almost as much as I like playing them. Now let's talk about a system I never play on, Nintendo.
But you have one. Well, you have a Switch.
I do own a Switch 1, and I do own about 70-some-odd Switch games. I just don't play it nearly as much as the PS5 Series X.
I couldn't believe that when you told me the other day, because I had my console longer, and I maybe have like half those amount of games.
Yeah, I organized my gaming shelves this week, and I was like, oh shit, I need more shelves.
I need to do something about mine, too.
We previously... Yeah, lambasted the Switch 2 and their shit marketing and their overpriced stuff and the lack of games. But that didn't stop the average consumer. Nintendo this week announced they've sold about 10 million units of the Switch 2, which has far exceeded their initial expectations, I'm sure. They also said, by the end of the fiscal year, which is in April of next year, they think they're going to get about 19 million units. And I was like, I don't know, about 7 months from now, that'll be enough. But okay, if you say so, Nintendo. People want to run with a story of, like, there was a boycott or whatever over the pricing, and we've previously talked about another episode called Nintendo W2F Are You Doing? That calls for boycotts never work. It always has to come organically. But I don't know that either of us are surprised at this number, that there are, you know, 10 million stupid-ass people who want to spend $600 on this thing with no games.
Probably not. I mean, just from the anecdotal evidence I read and saw and clips and whatnot, you just kind of extrapolate that out. Yeah, I could easily see there being, almost 10.5 million people that would worldwide that would buy a Switch, because, you know, it's not just American or European consumers too. The Japanese, they really love their handhelds, as we've mentioned before. So, and I haven't seen anywhere where they've broken down the numbers regionally. I don't know if they've, gone that in depth with the analytics or anything, but I'd be interested in seeing that as well. But I'm sure over here it has.
They did have not a presentation, but a business thing, because it's that time of the year where everyone's doing it. We'll talk about another one later. But they also said, and it was like a big chart, and it says, of the amount of people who have owned a Switch 2, 84% have owned a Switch 1, which means they have 16% of the people who bought a Switch 2 have never owned a Switch 1 in their entire lives. And I don't know if I believe either of those numbers. But also, let's just take it at face value, that 84%. So 84 out of 100 people already own a Switch, but think it was worth $600 to get a Switch 2. I still don't think it's worth it. I don't think it'll be worth it for 2 or 3 years down the line. And even then, I'd have to question it.
If you went with the supposition that all those people were big Mario Kart fans, it's somewhat plausible to think that they would, purchase it. But yeah, the fact that there's that high percentage of people that have apparently did not play the Switch 1 is a little hard to believe, because I could see there being some people out there where they liked the concept of the Switch, but they thought it lacked power, so they figured, okay, I'll just wait around for the next one that, can play third-party stuff.
Also, people, the 84% here, already have a massive library of Switch games that will work on the Switch, too. If you're a new buyer, you've got Mario Kart and Donkey Kong. It's like, that's it. Mm-hmm. Unless you're really into game key cards. If you're a huge fan of not owning your games, Nintendo Switch 2 is the place to be.
Yeah, and they released the software unit numbers, too, and it's about twice. It's almost exactly twice the amount of hardware they've sold. And I guess everybody just bought two games.
Did you see the Mario Kart numbers? It's about 8 million. But they've sold 10 million Switch 2s, but 8 million Mario Karts? So there were 2 million dumbasses who bought them separately? Or just bought the base console and didn't buy the bundle?
Hey, if you're dumb enough to do that, then you deserve to lose $30, $40, whatever the extra was.
Unfortunately, this is an audio podcast, so I can't show you the graph I'm looking at, but they also show the breakdown of the Switch adoption timing, because they have all that data. You have to sign up for Nintendo when you buy this thing. There's a huge chunk of people that bought the original Switch when it launched in 2017, and then a smaller chunk in 2018, a much smaller chunk in 2019. And 2020, it expands because of the virus of indeterminate origin that forced everyone to stay home and play Animal Crossing. But the 2020 bar graph is smaller than the 2018. So that huge influx that allegedly everyone was playing in 2020 wasn't that big a deal after all. And then shrinks and shrinks and shrinks until we get to 2025. There are enough people, Stizzy, I don't know the numbers because it's a chart, who bought a Switch 1 in this year, 2025, then went on to buy a Switch 2. I'm going to assume these are scalpers or whales, or, you know, what is the percentage of these people who are second, third party sellers?
I imagine that would be pretty high, because it's still amazing the number of just Switch 1 being sold. I might be looking at the same chart here where 1.2 million were sold of just March of this last year. Now that's probably the fiscal year. There's probably fewer people that have bought it in the year 2025, but who knows how many, scalpers, third parties actually bought the Switch 2 too. I'd imagine it's somewhere in the couple million. I might be overshooting there, but it's such a problem in the tech industry these days. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. But if these numbers are accurate, which, you know, nobody's doubting it, which I kind of find funny whenever PlayStation comes out and says, "Oh yeah, we sold like yeah. this million more PS2s," nobody ever believes them. But we're supposed to take Nintendo at their word because they've never been caught lying. But if these numbers hold, they may very well double them by May. I see the number is just below 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
So
for the projections, not for what's been sold currently?
Yeah, projections. I guess that's factoring in the forecast of potential sales in the next year or so. And now, will that break any records? Will that, you know, be even in the top 10? Of a console sold, who knows?
I think I said this on the, I'll shout them out here, the Casual Consumers podcast, but I think all three of the big three are going to have, you know, slow drops until the total heat death of consoles eventually. The next Xbox is not going to sell as well as the Series X. The PS6 is not going to sell as well as the PS5. I would have to logically assume the Switch 2 won't sell as well as the Switch. That's just based on how logic works.
Well, especially if they're just minor upgrades in hardware with less and less software as time goes on.
There are apparently a lot of Pokemon ZA fans to sell as many Switch 2s.
I was joking earlier, they've sold exactly twice as many software units, and I guess everybody who has a Switch 2 is just buying two games. That's how it would work exactly.
They're counting Switch 1 games.
I don't know. The graphics I'm looking at, Switch is a different. They got different numbers. They got hardware they've sold 154 million, and then software they've sold 1.5 billion units of software for the Switch 1. So I don't know how that's counted. I don't know if games with different versions, where those get slotted in. I would assume for whatever system you bought it for, like if you bought the Switch 1 version of ZA, it would go in those numbers, and you bought the Switch 2, it'd go in those numbers.
Sure.
So
I'm still not yet encouraged to purchase a Switch 2. I don't know about you.
No, it doesn't have enough games. Doesn't have enough appealing games for me to make the plunge, yeah.
And that's the Nintendo Minute. We give it as much attention on the show that we can do in real life.
The Nin Minute. I feel like we could make a catchy name for that segment.
Well, the Nintendo Minute is what those people who used to work at Nintendo called it.
Oh, I guess I never knew that. I never really watched any of their marketing, so.
Yeah, it's fine. Speaking of Japan, our good friends at Square Enix have made a maybe good decision and a maybe questionable decision. They're firing a bunch of people. No, that's not the good or bad decision. The people that they're firing are not from Japan. They are entirely in Europe and in England. and in the Americas. They appear to be in the IT department, marketing, publishing, sales, QA, business planning, other stuff, like not actual software development or even hardware development. I don't do hardware. You know what I mean? But like porting shit, just moving stuff from one console to the other, or any of that stuff.
Yeah, it's all IT, marketing, publishing, sales, QA, business planning.
But all not in Japan, all in Europe and the Americas.
Right, yeah.
Now, the reason they want to do this might have less to do with any sort of Western ideology and more to do with Square Enix also announcing, hey, we want to use AI for everything, including like QA and bug testing. They said within the next 2 years, they're going to be like 80-85% all AI for the quality control of their games. And I think that's a kind of good idea because, you know, 2025 is the year of unoptimized games. Just fucking everything needs updates all the time. And if maybe a computer can bug check better than a human and is cheaper, that's probably the way companies are going to go, no matter how many people on Twitter want to get mad about it.
Oh, I'm sure it would probably do a good job if it is actual AI and not just cheaper labor, which a lot of tech companies are doing and getting called out for. Mm-hmm. But, I have no doubt that they're looking into AI research. I think it's some project headed by the University of Tokyo. And yeah, it's like 70% over the end of 2027 that they want to be doing this debugging and QA stuff. But a lot of these other departments that are seeing layoffs cannot be replaced by AI. And I said to you last night, and as we've said on this show many times, if you don't cut off the head of the snake, then it doesn't matter. It's just going to regrow its tail or body or whatever. And I said, if you don't fire the execs in Japan that, you know, approve this in the beginning, it may not change. But that was before I saw this, and now he's not Japanese, but the CPO, John Heineke, who I believe we've talked about on this program. I don't even know if that's his name, how you pronounce it. But he's the one that took over Final Fantasy VII Remake marketing when he assumed the position in 2018. And he replaced what was a compilation English voice acting crew with a bunch of like teenage pop stars, like, you know, Cody Christian and Tyler Hoechlin. And which he did the same thing when he used to be for Blizzard. Like, he took over StarCraft II's marketing way back. And they had some unknown gal voicing Kerrigan, the main character, and replaced her with Trisha Helfer of Battlestar Galactica fame. And so he's got this kind of obsession of casting these roles for these games he's marketing in with just, you know, the hot new face or whatever, you know, some pop star, some actor he wants to do. And he said directly many times that he was basically the bridge between the Japanese offices and the Western branches. And he would be the one telling them, the ones in Japan, the guys making the game, how to market the game to a Western audience. And so he's probably responsible directly for a lot of those, as we talked about, Western ideologies that have been in Square Enix and have made their games worse, in my opinion, as a whole.
It's things, not, you know, people want to point out to the big stuff like Forspoken and whatever, but it's also, I don't know if you ever talked about on air, there was some issue with Final Fantasy 14 that lost a lot of subscribers because someone over here in the West wrote a character that was really fucking retarded and turned a lot of players off.
Yeah, it was the lead of their newest expansion. Dawnwalker, was that it? No, so Dawn Trail, that's it. And it was a really annoying character just in general, but then the English office, just the localization team, just compounded it by casting a trans person in the role. And I never played it because it just had a lot of red flags to it. Mm-hmm. And so I stopped playing around that time, so I never saw it, but I saw enough clips. And yeah, the character is really grating, and you're just stuck with it the entire time. And it lost a lot of subscribers. In fact, the number dipped below 1 million, which is crazy because it saw its peak in just the expansion before with over like 20 something million. It was crazy. It looked like it was just not going to stop. But yeah, that was a huge, huge dip in subscribers and obviously revenue.
Yeah, as we talked before, Square Enix has had their own unique brand of stupid-ass problems, like trying to get into NFTs and various things, and a few stabs at live service stuff. They had to let go of, you know, Deus Ex and Tomb Raider and all this shit to Embracer, who lost them again, blah, blah, blah. And then all of the exclusivity deals also, I don't think, helped with Sony in terms of putting stuff out there. 16 did not do as well as they wanted. 7 Rebirth did not do as well as they wanted. So their new plan, along with this, you know, announcement that they're firing all these people, was also like, yeah, we're rededicating ourselves to multi-platform stuff. It's like, yeah, you kind of have to now, guys. I don't think it's impossible for them to turn around. We talked about this in a previous show. It's not Ubisoft, EA levels of end times for Square Enix quite yet. But it's going to take some serious effort on their part, some real slimming down and focusing down. And if they have to fire Western branches to do this, so be it.
Yeah, I think you can get away with having console-exclusive games. I mean, that's how the industry was built. And but the thing is, you have to make sure... You have to have pretty lean finances. And there can't be...
Yes.
You can't have that many bumps and failures, and that's just all of Square Enix. That's all it's been for the past decade. It's just failure after failure. Or games not meeting expectations, like the Remake Trilogy, who... Rebirth sold less copies than Remake. So, and I'm guessing that trend's going to continue with the next one.
I assume the third one won't sell as well, yes.
Yeah.
We don't know what, you know, we're just speculating in terms of that guy you said, how much influence he has on the Japanese branch. I don't know that, you know, even just making shit up here, a hypothetical thing where some American guy is saying, hey, you know what Americans really love? Overly complicated universe-hopping horse shit. Put that in your game. The kids will love it. I don't know about that. That's happening. That's causing them to lose sales.
Well, he was the one telling them that, hey, Tifa's tits are too big, so you got to do something about that.
Oh, okay.
put an extra shirt on her, which is also a problem.
It adds up.
Yeah, no, I have no doubt that it's Nomura's own wacky circus brain that's coming up with the Kingdom Hearts type storylines.
So best of luck to Square Enix and their attempts to bounce back. It's possible, but you're going to have to start getting rid of more people. I won't say fire every American, but, you know, fire every Canadian. How about that? Because they're also bad.
No, I'd say fire them all. I would say clean house in every single branch that's in a Western country, because it's ruined the Japanese game market. It's just the people that are working into them. If it was actually people in the US and the UK who actually grew up playing games and cared about these franchises, mm-hmm. then I'd be okay in them, you know, acting as sort of like a bridge between the Japanese, sure. you know, devs and the Western audience, but they're not. They're talked about this many times and it's still prevalent in the industry, and it's more good news. They haven't given us numbers, but someone in the London branch said that 140 people might be affected, the London branch in particular needs to be just raised to the ground, in my opinion.
I think London needs to be raised to the ground. Sorry to any potential British listeners, but your city and your country is kind of fucked right now.
No, it will be anyway, so yeah.
You need to start over. So getting them out of like the Japanese video game market is fine by me. We did cover some of this in our episode called Eastern Promises, which is mostly about the rise of Korean and Chinese games, because Japan has started westernizing itself and losing its identity. You know, there are outliers like Nintendo, of course, but even, you know, during the earnings call this week, Nintendo of America said, yeah, we're recommitting to our diversity. And it's like, ugh, stop it. Recommit to making fun, good games that everyone likes.
Well, they're not yet seeing... I mean, they're not seeing the blowback. I mean, they're still selling units and games,
switches,
so they're making money. So it's like they don't see any problem with it and all this crap. But these other companies that have, you know, they don't have the household cachet, name cachet as Nintendo, mm-hmm. that they have all these franchises that are not getting off the ground or ones that are floundering, then it's pretty bad. And there's no doubt that the success of the Korean and Chinese markets are also impacting these decisions.
Yeah.
And I say more of it.
Fire them all. You're right. Fire every American and every... I would be... I love dubbed. You know, I play... If I have the option, I would prefer to play a game dubbed. If we have to have a Japanese person who learned English, you know, manually translate the subtitles, I would prefer that rather than what we have now. The westernization of Japan or even just Square Enix video games. Just video games, period.
I forgot to mention a couple weeks ago in our Ninja Gaiden 4 show, but there is an option in the menu in the language settings where if you play in the Japanese dubs, you can play with subtitles that are more accurate to the Japanese, translation. And I thought, oh, that's nice, but it's not something that should be necessary. Like the English, like how you translate the game, they write the game in Japanese. English localizers, their job is to translate it as close as they possibly can. And then
you would hope
have voice actors say the lines instead of like having to have two separate types of subtitles in your game.
The Japanese script should be the default. You localization has always meant more than just translation. It has to make sense because a lot of idioms and stuff just don't translate because it's a whole fucking different culture. But I'd rather keep those idioms than try to force Western idioms on them. Like, if at any point Yakumo said gnarly, I'd be really pissed off.
Yeah, one of my favorite things, like, when I'm reading manga or something, and it's a fan translator, just some guy doing it in his spare time, and he'll write a translator note about something, you know, some reference or idiom, like you said, I don't understand. And it's fun to learn about that kind of stuff. Now, it's hard to do that in a video game, per se, or even an anime, but... I would rather not know something, but try to figure it out, you know, via the context or, you know, look it up on my own. That helps me learn.
All according to Keikaku. Now the big story of the week that everyone's lamenting about, even me a little bit, GTA 6 has been delayed again.
What?
I haven't kept track of how many. It's at least three, possibly four, announced delays. Like, they've actually come out and said, hey, it's delayed. This time, it's 6 more months from its initial date, so it is now a full calendar year from the time that we're recording this podcast.
Am I crazy, or was it originally set to release in, like, 2022, 23, or something?
I don't know, but fall 2025, I'm looking backwards, so about now.
Yeah, it's been a few times.
December, it leaked early. December of 2023, when we had the first trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Then earlier this year, we had the second trailer, and they said, okay, we delay it, you know, a couple more months, but don't worry, guys, it's coming in. Then this week, at the time of recording, they said, 6 more months. So what do you speculate that the reason for the delay is?
Well, I can... Go ahead and stop people and tell you what it's not about. It's not about the story that came out, I think, earlier in the week or the week before.
The union bullshit.
The
yeah.
union BS and the, I think it was the UK office or something.
Yeah.
They claim that they were trying to unionize and they got fired for that, but that is illegal. You cannot do that as a company. To much, you know, much of my chagrin, personally. But, no, it's... It's more likely that the people that were fired were probably either directly or indirectly responsible for the leaks. Because this game has been leaked a lot, not just that big yes. one in 2023. There have been, you know, little breadcrumbs dropped here and there, you know, over the years. So I don't think it was that.
The trailer, dude, the trailer 2 starts with, what's his name, the dude Jason. He's like, just fixing some leaks. It's like, that's intentional. They put that there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, it was definitely tongue in cheek, and I was memeing last night when we were just talking on our own I don't think it's really anything story related.
To repeat what Rockstar has claimed, they're done with the game. They're now going to spend a year of polish to make sure everything works at launch. So it is optimized. As far as speculation, I still think it's online. I say what I said last time it was delayed. There's something wrong with the online service that they can't get to work. And so that leads me to further speculation of what I think they should do, which is port over, give you the ability to port over your GTA 5 character, and at least all the money, if not all your shit. Here's $40 billion. Like, go out in Vice City and do something. That's got to be it.
Yeah, and I think so too. I think that's what it is. And I think they want to have online ready and ready to play at launch.
Because it didn't for their last three games.
Right. And their reason for that has always been, well, we want to give our players time to play the single player game. And I always thought that was kind of BS, because if you want to play a single player game, you're going to. You know?
Yeah. Like, you can play it whenever.
Like, what does it matter if the online is available? Then, I mean, it's like, I can play the single player first and then get into online. I mean, it's just, it's fine. But, yeah, I think it might be an issue trying to port over all that stuff, because GTA 5 online, as it is right now, is not the same as it was when it launched.
No. It's currently like the 40th biggest economy in the world.
Well, I'm not even talking about just from a money standpoint. I'm just talking about like in-game content, because
things you can do and things you can buy. Yes, absolutely.
Back when it first launched, it was just basically just an extension of the single player game. You just made your own character. You got in a posse together. You robbed people. You blew shit up. It was just more fun. You know, more of the stuff you'd expect from GTA. Now you're flying a DeLorean through the sky, and you got you get UFOs shooting rockets and all this different shit. And if you don't buy the money, it's hard to grind that shit, and it just doesn't become worth it. And a lot of I never looked at the numbers, but I would guarantee you most people play in private servers, because I could not imagine playing in a public server. Which is with all these, you know, all these GTA whales with their attack helicopters and just griefing the shit out of people.
When it launched on the 360, I do have vivid memories of you and me and our former co-host, who has moved on to better things in his life, Rob. We tried to get on GTA Online, and it fucking took forever. You had to restart a bunch of times, do that intro cutscene with Lamar a bunch. But it wasn't until the PS4 version, the next-gen version, when they ported it over, okay, it works day one. And, you know, we spent a lot of time there. We did a bunch of stuff, and then they added heists. But that was about the time we dropped out and moved on to something else. But they have just been keeping adding content to this day. There's just more shit, and, you know, story shit in air quotes, too, because you do talk to NPCs. Those NPCs have arcs. And it's like your player character never talks and just kind of stands there like, you know, whatever NPC tells you to go kill a million dudes and make $1 million.
Yeah, and $1 million is nothing in the game anymore. There would be, if you logged in after being gone a long time, they give you like $500,000 and like, wow, that's a lot of money. What can I buy? Oh, nothing really that great. Maybe a couple guns.
Hyperinflation in Los Santos, yeah.
Yeah, well, like you said, it's a giant economy now, so it's no wonder the market's just completely fucked on the game.
Which does lead to the cynical thing, you know, saying it's sort of in jest and sort of not in jest. Like, as you said, people keep buying these shark cards, so why would Rockstar move on? People lamenting about Red Dead Online not being as popular. It's like, well, because people didn't buy gold like they bought shark cards. That's straight up the reason. There were just less people on it, so Rockstar decided not to put as many resources or try as hard.
And I think a big reason Red Dead 2 didn't take off is because there were no private servers in that game, and you had to be in the same room with a bunch of cheaters and assholes just griefing you to death, and you couldn't get anything done. Yeah. It was like I played a bit of Red Dead 2 online, and I would spend, I mean, there'd be some nights where I'd spend like half the time just hopping from server to server, just trying to find one with hardly any people, or, you know, people that, you know, just I could tolerate being around, because the rest of the time it was just, I'd be sitting in camp, and then next thing I know, I'm getting a repeater round through the back of my skull. It's just, God, I can't stand it. Then they, obviously they were prioritizing GTA 5 Online because it made it more money. So there was less content for Red Dead Online. And it was, it was eventually forgotten about and left on the wayside.
There's a metaphor in there somewhere, I'm sure.
And I think they want to, they want people to immigrate to GTA 6 Online. I don't think they want them sitting in GTA 5 Online anymore.
Well, yeah, but they also can't shut it down. You know, they have to announce a sunset eventually. I understand that. But they're not going to immediately say, like, the day this launches next November, okay, GTA 5 is over. You're no longer allowed. Because just like with the Switch, there'll still be plenty of people who won't want to move on to GTA 6 for various reasons. So you have to keep all those servers up for the time being.
Yeah, for sure. And they're probably having discussions right at this, you know, every day of how long they're going to keep 5 online. And it just depends on, obviously, the success of 6 and how many people are playing in 6 online, because there will be a large influx of players. And personally, I would rather they just start over from scratch. Like, it's, I hope there's absolutely no tie-in, like, no characters, none of your money, none of the shit that you bought. Just everybody starts from the, you know, same place. Because it's the same, it's a completely different map.
You and I agree on that. There's a huge subset of gamers who would be pissed off at that, though. Because, like, GTA RP, I don't know if you've ever looked into it, but it's also a huge thing over there on GTA Online. People don't just kill each other. They live lives there. They make up their own stories. They have, like, car meets are one of the most popular things in GTA 5. You just drive your cool-ass car to other people who also have cool-ass cars. It's a major thing over there. So I have to imagine there's a huge subset of gamers who don't want to start over.
Oh yeah, it's a huge investment. I remember reading a post not too long ago about this this guy who, he was a hardcore role player in GTA Online, and he just, when he started a family and got married and had a kid, he couldn't have the time to do it anymore. And I'm thinking, like, gosh, man, it's like the hours he used to put into it, it's like how much of a commitment is it if just you know, having a wife and a kid, which obviously take up a lot of your time, but I mean, they get really serious into that.
Well, that's true of, like, a lot of things. You know, your average MMO, you know, the WoW lifers, formerly FF14 lifers, people pick a game, Fallout 76, Elder Scrolls Online, fucking whatever, Fortnite. They pick a game and they stick with it. If Epic were ever stupid enough to announce Fortnite 2 and none of your shit carries over, how many people are going to actually move over?
That'll never happen. They will never do it.
Yeah, I know. Hypothetical.
And that's that. And that's another aspect of how lucky they have, because while I can't personally stand the art style, it is sort of, I guess you'd call, timeless. Like, it's going to carry over.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It'll last for a long time. But as opposed to GTA, when you have GTA 5 online and then soon 6 online, 6 online's going to look better than 5 online, so people are going to want to play it, I would think.
This is also important. We don't know 100% when the PS6 and the next Xbox are coming. Insiders, in air quotes, game journals, say 2027. So this is going to be another dual release then. So this is going to come out for both consoles. So why would you buy it on the PS5 when you can buy it on the theoretical PS6? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have to have 3 servers up and running forever. It's like, so maybe they skip the entire console generation. It's like, Jesus.
Two. There'd be 2 console generations they would skip. Because I don't count the port of 5 over to PS4 and Xbox One.
They did port it twice. There's also a PS5 Series X version of GTA 5.
Right, but I do wonder if that did affected the delays as well. I also think, not just online, but I think it's just like the sheer visuals that they're trying to achieve with this game are just absolutely bonkers, and I don't see how it's possible to play even on a base PS5 or Xbox Series S or X.
Mm-hmm.
S for sure, there's probably like no way they could play on it.
This is gonna be like a minimum 200 gigabyte game, minimum.
Oh no, yeah, for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if it was over that. But I just don't see. Like, yeah, it's gonna be really, really tough to run it on these current gen consoles. Like even even the upgraded the PS5 Pro, it's like to get the what you're seeing in the trailers, like get the look, you'd have to get like a 5080 or 5090 Pro or whatever. You know, you would have to have a real top end PC, and not everybody's gonna have that. And I'm guessing most people who play GTA are playing it on a console, so they're gonna want to to look good and run at least decent on a console before they release it.
Now, with a year of polish, maybe they can get that done. A year of optimization. Best of luck. Personally, individually, I know you said before you're not super interested. I still am. I don't know about day one. It's a fucking year away, so I'm going to put it out of my brain as soon as we're done with this podcast. You still sticking to it? You're not interested in buying it?
I don't know if I'm go far as say I'm not going to buy it, but it's just the new. I'm just indifferent to the news, and I like the first time I heard the delay, or you know, several delays. I was just kind of like, you know,
how can you miss something that doesn't exist? Sure,
right. And it's just been so long, and they've shown what their priorities are, and that it's just pumping more money into the online, which you know makes sense. They make billions of dollars off of it. So I've read somewhere that their market cap is going to be in the billions, just missing the May window and pushing it back. But they don't care. They're probably, you know, they're going to be making billions in the first few months.
Oh, yeah. Jar knows what the stock tanked after the announcement. I was like, yeah, no shit. They'll be fine. I'm not worried about Rockstar or their financials. Whatever you and I think, whatever Jar knows think, this game is going to sell 10 million. It's going to sell Switch 2 numbers in the first week.
Yeah, the stock price has been down for the whole tech industry. I think Amazon and NVIDIA and AMD are down as well, like 7, 8, 10% or whatever. So that's probably related to that. But, I mean, missing out on the market cap, that is a reality. But the thing, like, and there have been, I mean, there's been, like, apparently an insider came out from another company says, like, we couldn't do that in our company, but Rockstar can. They can afford to do that because, yeah, they will sell tens of millions of units in the first few weeks. I mean, hell, they may even, like, by the end of next year, they may sell 50 million copies of the game before the end of 2026. Mm-hmm. It's going to be nuts. They will for sure be on the top five of most sold game of all time. Which you'll never guess what number two is.
I don't actually have the chart in front of me. I don't know.
Well, I looked it up earlier because I was curious. Do you know what the number one game is? I'm sure you do.
Minecraft?
Yeah, Minecraft. You know how many it sold? 350 million copies of copies of Minecraft been sold. Two is GTA 5, understandably, at 220 million. That's crazy there was that much disparity between number one and two. It's like man, GTA 5, but then Minecraft. But and then like third
Minecraft
place
is also technically on mobile, so they're counting that.
Right, but it's still units sold, and it's still, they've made a ton of money off of it, obviously. But, yeah, GTA 6, when it comes out, and if it is polished, and it runs well, then, yeah, they will sell a shit ton.
At $100 a pop.
Yeah, that's another thing. If they go through this $100 just base price for the game, and then it's released in sort of, kind of, the same time period of, like, when the next console generation's coming out, and they offer an upgrade, how much is the upgrade going to cost? 50? 60?
I never thought about that, but you're right. It would have to be exponentially more, because the upgrade this gen was a minimum of 10, so I assume 20.
If they sell at 100, it's going to be more than 20, I think, but that's another conversation for another day.
We'll revisit this in a year when the game actually comes out. Yes. Maybe. If the game comes out a year from now.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever mentioned the date, but it's November 19th, 2026 is the new release date.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Which, odds of another delay. What do you think? You think it gets pushed back again, or?
No, I think they stick to it this time.
I think so, too, because this is about the average of number of delays for typical Rockstar games. I think Red Dead 2 had 4 delays. It was at least 3.
Oh, yeah, as wrap up this segment, I think it is important to talk about that. Like, whatever about the delays, whatever about unions and financials and all of this shit, these games are always well made and they're always fucking good. Whatever I think personally about Red Dead 1 and 2, that's, they're both great games and people adore them. GTA 5 sold a gajillion copies, as you said, because people fucking love it. So you can think whatever you want about how Rockstar does their business, but the products that they serve up, people adore. So yeah, we both think this will sell very, very well and will be great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to draw this out too long, but I guess a part of my indifference in the delay is obviously tied to the, you know, the length of time between titles. And it's not insignificant. It's 12 years. There have been, like we mentioned, there's been console generations that have come and gone. There have been trends innumerable that have come and gone. There have been lies and inner workings exposed in the industry at large that have been laid bare in the video game industry. And I just wonder if Rockstar Games would be immune to all that. I mean, I guess if any company could be, it would be them. But, I mean, if I was a crazy ideologue and I wanted to reach as many people as I possibly could in my crazy ideology, I would go for the top dog. I mean, the biggest host, as it were, and infect it. But, yeah, I don't know. And there's also been a lot of people that have left the company that were paramount to its success, like Dan Houser.
Yes,
both
Housers, yep.
And both Housers and Laszlo have left too. So, you know, that kind of gives me a little pause as well. So it's funny that I'm, you know, having the same reaction to a new GTA as I am with a lot of games, but that's just kind of the state of modern gaming as it is. I'm just in a you know, wait and see holding pattern with it.
Yeah, that's fair. Enough video game business. Let's talk games we've actually been playing. A couple episodes ago, I believe it was Toothless Vampires and the Ghost of No Way. We talked about the upcoming, at the time, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 from the developers The Chinese Room. I have since played it, I've beaten it, and I gotta tell you, it's one of my favorite games of the year. Definitely top 10, I'd have to think about top 5. I fucking love it, man. It is, I'll give you the overall first. You play as an elder vampire called the Nomad. He or she gives himself the dumb name of Fire, Phryye, which is stupid. It's a dumb name, but you can pick from one of the six clans that we talked about previously, and you get a certain subset of powers with whatever clan you pick. You are also, for story reasons, possessed by another vampire who's a Malkavian, which is a crazy kind of vampire, but he's also a detective. So in between sections where you play as Fire, you play sections as this detective named Fabian. You play sections of him in the 1920s and in the modern day where he's investigating murders. People are murdering both vampires and mortals. And he's like, okay, what kind of creature is behind this sort of thing? And you piece together this whole mystery. And there's a lot of dialogue and stuff and cool shit like that. 90% of the game really is combat. You're fighting what they call the Anarchs, the bad guy vampires, who are not part of your court, your cabal. It's called the Camarilla. It's the good guy, in air quotes, vampires. You're all fucking monsters, let's not pretend. Or you're fighting like Thin Bloods or human hunters who want to eradicate all vampires, that sort of thing. But the gameplay is a lot of punching and using your cool vampire powers to kill dudes. The other part is talking. There's a shitload of dialogue in this and story stuff and the telltale sort of thing of you talk to the prince of the Camarilla, the person in charge, and they're like, this person will remember that or was disgusted by that or was intrigued by that. And, you know, you have six or eight people you talk to regularly to do these sorts of things that, you know, deepen your relationship or make it worse. And there's like four different endings of the game. There's also, you know, if you care about achievements and trophies, there's one tied to every one of those and for beating the game as each one of the clans. Now, the bad part, this isn't an RPG like the first one. the powers don't matter as much in combat for the class you chose because you can cross class. By that I mean, you go around the city sucking the blood from regular ass people like you did in the previous game, but instead of just giving you health, this also gives you a certain amount of blood points, and you use those blood points to go to vampires of other clans in the game and say, hey, teach me your cool powers. And it's like, well, do you have enough blood points? Yes. Okay, you can learn my powers. So in theory, if you suck enough blood out from people in the city, you can gain enough blood to get all the powers in all the classes, which is kind of stupid for the kind of game it is, which is, again, a lot of dialogue. Yeah, and it
sounds like it breaks the lore, too.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about... It is not allowed to do that sort of thing, sort of power sharing. But they excuse it away because you're an elder vampire. You know, you're not a fledgling, you're not a newbie vampire. You're several, like, at least 300-some-odd years old. So you've been around a while, but you've been in stasis, what they call torpor. And you just woke up to this new world of, like, shit, I don't know anything in Seattle 2024. Oh, by the way, the game takes place in Seattle of 2024, which tells you about the many delays that this game took place. But, you know, you don't know all about the world, but you know about vampire society. And a lot of the game is vampire politics rather than just, you know, murdering civilians or trying to convert people into vampirism, which is the big draw of the White Wolf universe. Of, like, if these people existed, how would they interact with society? It's like, what would a vampire do if he had to go to, like, Carl's Jr. and wanted a burger? That kind of shit. Again, it is not an RPG. If you're not really into combat, I don't think you'd probably like it at all. If you were a huge fan of the original one, and I'm not really, I think it's a fine, jank-ass game. Bloodlines 2 is also pretty jank. But I think they did a good job considering the tumultuous hell that this went through. I did really enjoy it. I can't recommend it at 7, I guess 60. I could recommend it at like 40. I think you'll have a good time. The problem is because of the way the Vampire Detective Mystery goes through, I don't know how good it'll be to replay. I haven't had a chance to play it through with a different clan or anything to see if it's worth replaying to get the different endings and all that shit.
Yeah, I got it on the Gamefly queue, and I'm hoping to play it before the year is over. And I haven't seen a lot of discussion about it, but, like, you know, the things I have seen is, like, clips of, oh, hey, that's kind of a wonky voice line there, or delivery, or animations. Yeah, a little jank, but, like, the number one thing I have been seeing about the discussion is, it's a fine game. It shouldn't have been Bloodlines 2.
No, absolutely not. This should have been a vamp. We talked this before, I don't know if it was on the show, but, like, Swan Song, the game, the really jank Vampire Masquerade game that's much more of an RPG than this is. Bloodlines 2 is what I wanted Swan Song to be. It's like, this is a great entry in that universe that has dick fuck. There's one character I won't spoil who shows up from Bloodlines 1, and when they show up in the sequel, I was like, oh, you don't look or sound anything like you used to, and you're gone, goodbye, that was a fun 5 minutes, is that kind of shit? But it has no relation to the previous game whatsoever. That was the title. I guess they needed the title to make it, you know, marketable or whatever.
Yeah, I would say so. It's probably the main reason. It's disappointing to hear it's not really, not even just like story related. If they just wanted to make a totally a different story, that's fine. But just not being an RPG really as you know, as ingrained as those systems were in the original game. Personally, I can't say anything about the writing because I think that was the strength of the original was the writing and the world building and learning the lore and all that. And that it was because it's the first game is not like even back then the combat was really dated, but you know, what made it so endearing, to the people who played it and such a cult classic was it had this dark modern twist on kind of like common monster lore that, you know, if you didn't read the novels or play the tabletop, you weren't really familiar with. So, you know, it introduced a lot of different people and it was a lot of fun, but, I mean, if it's enjoyable, then yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what Chinese Room came up with.
It might have. 'Cause they were... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's like, even if I came out, you know, not disliking the game, I couldn't blame them per se. 'Cause they were just like, they were like the Josh Whedon. They were just handed off this, like, you know, these mismatching parts and saying, you know, like, hey, make Bloodlines 2 out of this.
I should mention two things. I do like Justice League as a film. I do. And my favorite story game of last year was not my game of the year. That was Life is Strange Double Exposure. I think I had the best story of last year. But the gameplay was, you know, what do you want to do? I feel similar about that with Bloodlines 2, in that I really love the story and the characters, but the gameplay is probably going to turn a lot of people off if you get bored of fighting a lot. There's two characters, in fact, where I hated one, but by the end of the game, it's like, you know what? I like you a lot. And the opposite happened, too. I liked the introduction of this character. We spent a lot of time together. I talked to them. And then by the end of the game, it was like, I want you fucking dead. I'm going to make sure I cut your head off myself.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's... Yeah, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. It's in the queue. It's coming, hopefully.
Well, more to say if you get it. One you did beat, was this another rental or you bought? The first Berserker Kazan. That's hard to say.
Yeah, and I always mix it up. Sometimes I'll say Kazan First Berserker or First Berserker Kazan, leave out the but initially...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to go do the intro.
Well, I wanted to set it up. It's a spinoff thing in a universe that's already established.
Yes, the Dungeon Finder, I think it's called. I know absolutely nothing about it.
They made a fighting game already called DNF Duel that has the same kind of archetypes.
Right. I've looked a little into the lore, and this game is loosely tied into it. It's supposedly... like, set way before the events of, like, you know, like, I guess there's a main timeline or whatever. So, and it apparently, from what I've read from people who are into the universe, it does the characters justice. So that's always, you know, that's always nice to hear. But yeah, this, I originally rented it, but I ended up buying it because I loved it so much. And it is in my top five games of the year. I don't know if it's my GOTY yet. I would have to think about that. Early in the year, I would have said Expedition 33, but, you know, we had our issues there. But, no, mm-hmm. Kazan is excellent. And it's, I would tell you, because it is a Souls-like, quote-unquote, but once you really start getting into and learning the systems, it feels almost like a character action game masquerading as a Souls-like. Because... It's got really difficult bosses. It's got the, you know, you can lose your souls when you die. You got to recover them. But that, you know, it's not really that big a deal. Because, like, when you die at a boss, the souls drop off in front of the room. Lacrima, that's the name of it. The currency. So that's never really too much of a danger of losing it permanently. But, once you actually, like, pick a weapon type and then... start going down the skill tree and the weapon abilities and sort of testing and tweaking things and finding the right build and getting the right loot. Because it has a kind of Diablo-like loot system where it's not like to the extent of, say, like an AC Odyssey where they were just, you know, throwing loot at you like candy corn and it was just became too much. You do get a lot of loot and... it's, you know, more like you can update your current equipment, but it's probably more beneficial just to, like, you know, use the equipment you pick up in a stage or whatever. But it's a lot of fun. It's extremely fast paced. It's the mechanically. Go ahead.
No, go on.
No, I was just, I just like, it's the main attraction, the appeal of the game is obviously the fighting. And it's very, very well honed. It's great how well it plays.
The last time you heaped praise on a Souls like this much was Lies of P. So I was going to ask you to compare the two, compare and contrast. Which is better? Which is more fun?
That's a tough one. I would because they're probably they're one and two of Souls likes that are, you know, not
FromSoft.
You know, not from software games. They're definitely the best I've played in that regard, and both from Korean studios, coincidentally. But they both look great. They both actually, unlike most Souls games, they actually have a coherent storyline that's, you know, there's actually some connective tissue that you can pick up and you can understand what's going on, who the characters are, what their motivations are, you know, how they're likely to act or react to certain things. And that's really nice. That's a nice change of pace. And I would say Kazan is much more fun to play, but Lies of P has better weapons in that game. It's not the combat systems aren't as complex or in depth as Kazan, but they do some really, really neat things with different types of weapons and special perks that the weapons come with. So it's very hard. It's 1A, 1B right now. I'd have to think more about it, but Kazan was, it's a fun ass game, and it's like it is. Some of the bosses are really hard, and they come in all shapes and sizes. There's big old creatures that look like your typical Souls boss, and then there's human enemies that either like really strong or slow or fast and quick and small moving targets, and you know, mages, armor types, you name it. And the environments are great as well. It's not like the gothic styling as you see in like the Dark Souls franchise, but it's more of a Greco-Roman, which you don't really see a lot. And it's always really cool when you see, obviously, like a Korean studio and kind of recreate that sort of architecture and style. And you can really tell how much research and work that they put into making it look authentic. Or, like a fantasy version of it, I guess,
Yes.
Because this has dragons and shit like that, so. And magic and all that good stuff. And
I did eventually try Lies of P based on your recommendation. I haven't gotten too far, and it's been a bit since I played it. Based on what you know about me and how shit I am at games, would you recommend that I try Kazan?
Oh, I would say Kazan's harder than Lies of P. I think it edges it out just a little bit. Lies of P, I would say it's harder in the areas between bosses than Kazan is, but okay. Kazan has the tougher bosses on the whole. But luckily, both games have different difficulty settings, so they have easier ones than the intended difficulty, so you can...
Having played on the easier difficulties of Lies of P, let me tell you, that doesn't make a hell of a lot of difference.
Well, lucky for you, Kazan has two easier difficulties than the standard. It's really weird in Kazan. Like, I first tried the demo way back in February, I think it was, and I really liked it, really enjoyed it, but I was playing other stuff, and I thought, you know what, I'll pick this up later on down the line. And it just had one difficulty back then, and it was just normal. But when I loaded up my save data from the demo into the, regular game, it was expert difficulty. And I'm like, I don't remember picking expert difficulty. I don't remember there being an expert difficulty. And I read up, and sure enough, they've added the other ones in after the launch. And they've also added in a lot of different stuff after, and patches and stuff like that, and they've really fine-tuned the game into a very enjoyable experience, and it's a ton of fun. And it's got a predictable story. It's just typical like revenge storyline, and you know who the big bad is pretty early on. So it was nice seeing that there wasn't like somebody in the shadows, although there's like hints of that like afterwards, but like the final boss is who you're, gunning for the entire time. So, and it definitely lives up to the build up for sure. And it's bloody and it's fast and it's brutal and it's a damn good time.
I put it on the rental queue myself then. See how that goes. Given that
another thing. The women are hot in the game.
It's a Korean game. You've mentioned this, yes.
Yeah, but it's like there's like 16 bosses, I think, in the game in total. and five of them are women, and they're all smoking. Like, even, like, the demon ones with horns and shit and wings. And it's like, but it's like, damn. God, I really miss this back in our games over here.
Yeah, back over here in the West.
And they're all good characters, too. You know, they're well-rounded.
I am, air quotes, looking forward to it as much as I can look forward to it. So it took me over a year to get into Liza P, so yeah, we'll see when I play Kazan. I don't know. No promises here. I'll get to it eventually. I got a lot to do.
I would definitely recommend it. It's not as, I would say it's not as quite as accessible as, you know, say like Ninja Gaiden 4, you know, as we both played recently. And it's not, you know, it's not quite that fast, but no, I think it's a very, very, it's a good game, and it's got a bigger learning curve than most of these types of games, which was refreshing.
One game we have been playing together, in fact, Borderlands 4, came out back in September, I believe, and we finally got around to it because it was on sale. Hey, guess what, Sizzy? This game hasn't sold as well as Take-Two would have liked, or 2K would have liked, excuse me.
I can't imagine with all the controversy leading up to it.
With the writers being idiots and Randy Pitchford being an idiot and the movie that tanked and all the stuff that came out about leaks and maybe possibly character replacements. But now that we've actually played, I think we've played about 10 hours worth. For background, we've played all of these games together. Again, as mentioned earlier, we used to play with Rob back in the long times ago. So we played through one, not in order. We played 1, 2, 3, Tiny Tina's, Wonderlands, and the pre-sequel all. So it was kind of only, it was an eventual natural thing that we were going to get to 4. Now that it's here and that we played about 10 hours, what do you think of it?
I think it's fine so far. It's about what I expected it to be. It's the guns feel good. Moving around feels fine. It seems like they've, you know, kind of built on what they established in the third game and in Wonderlands, at least from just like a mechanical standpoint, but
yeah, there's more movement mechanics, you know, in terms of the gliding and grapple hooking and shit like that, and the spot dodging that we discovered just yesterday. If you press the button, you go whoosh. I was like, oh shit, didn't even realize I could do that. And then the ability to call your vehicle from anywhere, which we've been begging for since the beginning.
Yeah, a lot of quality of life stuff, which is nice. Although the menu UI is atrocious.
It's the worst fucking thing in the game.
Because it's one of those things where it's built, obviously, for use a cursor on. Not a mount, you know, not a controller. Which just bugs the shit out of me, because I don't like menus like that. Like, if I was using a mouse on it, it'd be one thing, but, and it just doesn't, it just looks blah. It looks bad, too. I don't like looking
at it. It's a hideous UI. It is also, the amount of times, I don't know if we have the ability to record one of our play sessions, but we should, because so much of it is, oh, I pressed the wrong button. I was like, no, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to put it into junk, not favorite it. It's like a 4-button step process, which doesn't take that much time, I know. It sounds stupid. But it's fucking inconvenient, and it wasn't a problem in any of the previous games. It is now a pain in the ass to sort through your stuff. And considering Borderlands invented the looter-shooter of, here's a million guns, guys, you're constantly picking up new weapons, and it's like, yeah, but now it's a pain in the dick to look at what I have. Compare it to stuff in a vending machine.
Yeah, I think they're tied together with, you know, being obviously built, you know, developed around using a mouse and keyboard, because there's a lot of drop-down menus, a lot of long presses, just, you know, a lot of options that are spread too far out on the screen that you gotta tap over, you gotta move over, and it takes forever, and it's doesn't sort right, doesn't look good. It's whoever came up with the UI design needs to be fired into the sun. Terrible.
The characters and the story aren't too much to speak of either, but this, we've mentioned before, this franchise has been going slowly downhill since Borderlands 2. I think it peaked with pre-sequel. I think pre-sequel is the best one of those games. But 3 is just so fucking bad. And Wonderlands was so bad, neither of us remember much of it. I can tell you everything that happened in Borderlands 3. I don't know that I can tell you anything that happened in Wonderlands, other than the final boss.
Yeah, for me it might be just, you know, a repetition thing. I played 3, you know, I think 2 or 3 times all the way through. I only played Wonderlands once, because it was just kind of blah, kind of forgettable, and that's kind of what I'm feeling in this game.
I think this is better than Wonderlands.
Yeah, I guess it probably is a little bit better. I like the fact that my action skills actually seem viable in this game, and that is one thing I think they have improved as the series gone on, not counting Wonderlands. But I like always having my action skill available, and that it does decent damage, and it's just not a waste of time. And I just just shoot everything. I mean, you're shooting things most of the time, but that's a good thing. So, but
the characters are about on par as Wonderlands because it's from the same lead writer, who's a real fucking moron. I don't know his name off the top of my head, but I know he's a goddamn idiot. I've yet to meet a character. Again, we're only like 10 hours in, so there's plenty of game left. I've yet to meet a character I like or even tolerate. I dislike or hate most of them, especially the friendly NPCs. We met that big dude named Rush, and I just don't like him. And he's got a sidekick who's a they, refers to herself as a they frequently, and that gets so stupidly complicated. We were talking about this yesterday when we were playing. This character that is a they refers to themselves in the singular, as in, I need to go over there. It's like, are you allowed, when you refer to yourself as a they, to refer to yourself also in the singular? Neo-pronouns are fucking dumb, is what I'm telling you. Stop doing neo-pronouns. Everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say that. You're not a they-them. Cut that shit out.
They are dumb, and just as dumb as Rush, who's just, he's really touchy. He's touchy-feely, your best friend, but also your commander and boss sort of character, and it just, the two don't work, and the times they try to make him serious and that he's, you know, taking a hard stance and he's leading the troops, I also can't take him seriously then too. And the rest of the characters I feel about the same way. The only thing I could say is I guess it's nice that the main antagonist isn't just another handsome Jack clone.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they got that going for him. I mean, I can't really tell you much about him. He's trying to control everybody on the planet to safeguard his vault and the treasure within, but other than that, it's more of the same kind of writing. It's cringe jokes, it's out of date references. There are references in this game that would have been out of date when Borderlands 3 came out.
I've laughed exactly one time, and it was a joke that Claptrap of all people said. That was like a genuinely funny joke from Claptrap, and it was like, oh.
Yeah, that's the only time I ever cracked a smile as well, too.
And we made our own fun, obviously, but mostly fucking up and falling off of cliffs.
Oh, you have to. Yeah, you got to make your own fun and enjoyment in these kind of games. And I just don't know about Kairos as like a setting itself either.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's important. Borderlands 3, you were planet hopping all over the place. There were like four or five different places you went to, and you went back and forth. Borderlands 4 takes place entirely on one planet again, with different biomes.
Yeah, and it feels like, I guess you'd say, the most open world of any Borderlands so far. Like in previous games, it's just been sort of a collection of different maps that sometimes they were interconnected, or like three, like you said, you're jumping to different planets and whatnot. This is an open world area, and that's why they give you the scooter that you can summon and, you know, travel with ease. So it's, you know, makes it easier to traverse, but, you know, I guess it's, as far as backdrops go, I guess Kairos is fine. Now, we've just been in the one area so far, mm-hmm. with like, you know, there's like regional bosses scattered around, so we haven't gone to any of the other ones, and they may be a little bit more impressive, but so far it's just kind of like, this doesn't really give me a Borderlands sort of sense when I'm playing this.
It's entirely possible that this game will get better and we'll like it more the more we play, but I think the more likely thing that's going to happen is we'll both by the end of it say, that was fine, that was okay, it was a game, we still like 2 the best.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I think it'll be fine. I think we'll, you know, make some laughs and chuckles on our own, and have some interesting bugs. We've run into a few so far.
We should talk about that. Fucking hell, dude. Speaking of unoptimized shit.
Yeah, and this is like after the initial launch when it had a lot more game-breaking shit in it. Now, none of us, you know, neither... Well, actually, I guess technically one of the bugs we encountered was game-breaking.
Yeah, we had to restart a mission because an object wouldn't load, yes.
Yeah, yeah, a quest item would not load or did not drop or something like that, so we had to start all the way back, you know, before the checkpoint. And that was annoying as shit, because it was a big, long encounter.
Twice, I have had to respec my skill points because they've auto-refunded me after death.
I have not encountered that, although one time, when we played last night, I loaded the game up and my action skill was gone. And it was equipped, so I couldn't understand what was going on, so I unequipped it and then re-equipped it, and it was fine. So that was very strange.
I guess that, you know, it's like game-breaking, you know, other than that one story quest, which apparently looking it up is a very common bug. That's happened to a lot of people, what happened to us. And it's like,
yeah,
this came out in September or August or whenever the fuck. You should have fixed that already. Instead, they're working on, like, nerfing guns and shit. It's like, it's a solo game. You know, you play co-op, but there's no verses in this. It's like, let us kill the NPC enemies however we want. What does it matter if we use overpowered weapons?
I hate that in single-player games, and unfortunately, I think Kazan did the same thing I was reading about. They nerfed some abilities. It's unnecessary in single-player.
They did that in Expedition 33 as well. Do you remember the Mael overpower build? They nerfed that within a week.
Right, and she was still overly overpowered, too, at the end, too.
There's one real... I don't know if this is a good or bad change yet, but it's something we've both struggled with. There's a self-heal in this game now, where you tap left on the control stick, or the D-pad, rather, and you inject yourself a little health. Previously, in every single Borderlands game, enemies would drop health, and they drop health in Borderlands 4 as well. So it's counterintuitive for you to, after five games, to refill your own health rather than looking around the area for little red orbs.
Yeah, because I think before now, the design philosophy was they had enemies drop health packs, so you'd be constantly moving. And mm-hmm. you're not staying still, and you're not getting hit. It's not quite as frantic as, say, like a, you know, the Doom franchise is, but that's sort of, you know, it's wacky over the top. That's always what Borderlands has been. So they want you moving around. So yeah, having the health pack is, I mean, it's fine. It's gotten me out of some jams, especially during the first big boss encounter we had last night. Definitely did help out there. So. But it's definitely something, you know, not used to in the series.
Yeah. We'll probably play more, I don't know, today. I don't know, maybe next week, sometime. We'll finish it and, you know, have a full review by the end of it. But just for like an early, you know, a 10 hours in preview, I think we both know where this game is going and where it'll end up.
Yeah, not really sure how we, you know, far along we are on the story. But I think we hit... What were we, like 18, 19, respectfully?
Yeah.
Something like that. So out of 50 levels, so kind of gives you an idea. You know, little, maybe not quite halfway, but maybe, you know, close to.
So far, it's fine. I expect it will be fine until it's over.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything else? I think that's it.
No, it's, I think I will feel the same way as you by the time we're finished with it. And we'll say, yeah, this definitely was not worth $80 or even $70, and maybe not.
Well, that's why we both waited. I got it around $50.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
I think that's going to be it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can find me on Twitter at Loki Jarson. This podcast is available on all major platforms. Sizzy, where can people find you?
I am also on Twitter /X at the Joe Stizzy, and I'm also on YouTube at the Joe Stizzy, and I'm hoping to get some more videos uploaded, some more Let's Play uploaded this upcoming week. Had some personal stuff going on past week and a half, so haven't had time, but
real life sucks and we don't like talking about it. There will be no new episode next week after I release this one, maybe the week after, but I don't know because it's fucking Thanksgiving, or what is that, the 28th? Whatever, we'll figure it out. Don't worry about that. Real life is boring.
Like you were saying earlier, we might, you know, if we can find a way to record some, you know, our Borderlands 3 playthrough or something like that, just, you know, kind of a little taste. Because we do have an internet's worst channel on YouTube. We could upload it.
Yeah, too. It's just it is just the audio podcast. I'll have that automatically uploading. Video is like, I can't imagine what a pain in the ass it is, dude. When you said, I'm going to start uploading YouTube videos, I was like, good luck, buddy, because I don't want to deal with that shit.
Yeah, either that or I'd have to connect to the channel, our Internet's Worst channel, and then stream. And then it'd be up there on that. But yeah, that's something we'll talk about.
We'll talk about it off air. That's not important. Ignore everything we just said. Listener, I might even cut it out. Don't worry about it. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
See ya.